Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast, brought to you by Jeff Pollock. Jeff Pollock is our lawyer. If you need a lawyer, if you need the law, someone you can trust, we've had this guy for like over half a decade now. Jeff Pollock, that's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. And we're still waiting for Bob to finish all the work that Jeff agreed to do for you. And Jeff and I laugh about it all the time to see what's going to happen first, that, your license, your daughter's license. But we don't have time, Bob. We got such a packed show today, don't we?
We really do. Just to circle back to Jeff for just one second.
Hello, Jeff.
I laughed with my wife the other day that he might be the only lawyer in existence chasing the client so that he can do pro bono work for him.
It's true. You've kind of turned him into Atticus Finch. That's the only lawyer reference I can do. But okay, that Clarence.
What Darrow. Happens first? I get my license. I do my will. The Ontario line actually exists and you can use it.
Ontario line is third, just because by some freak, maybe you have to get your license. Your license is second, and the will, because the will part's easy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take long. That'll take a little bit longer for you.
And I've got a team of people helping me.
Yeah, exactly. I just wandered in one day. We got it done in like half an hour. But again, I don't have kids. Not that you can tell by the home that we are currently sitting in.
I have one stipulation. Okay, we're going to get to that in just one second.
Yeah.
Because this is important. But I have one stipulation I think you'll appreciate. In the will, I thought I need to throw in something that really messes with Sandra, my
Ooh,
wife.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm going to write it in that as my last request, I want only jazz listened to at my funeral. She hates jazz.
That's good.
I love jazz. It's like this is my last chance to try to win her over and make her listen to a day of jazz.
It's not going to work, but it's a great idea.
Thank you.
You know, so,
all Coltrane all the time.
See, that's too easy. You got to go with some like experimental stuff. I heard this in a cafe in Montreal. There was no one in there. You know, you got to do that. I would like to do a thing in the will where, you know, there's like I've left treasure and there's like a pirate map.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Map. So we got to get to it. Matt, I delayed so we could talk a bit about the will, but I walked in. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to expect. I got to the door. The front door has
Boo
yeah. written on it. Halloween. It's draping. It's cute. It's nice. It's Boo. But here's the thing. Anybody who knows you and knows your family, and when you guys do holidays, you do it up big.
Yeah.
And it's mostly your girlfriend, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
She really, really loves to celebrate stuff. She's a bit like that Kristen Wiig character. You know, the one who gets so excited about surprise parties?
Yes. Yeah.
Ooh.
And it was, I think she's the one who's working at the grocery store and everything excites her.
Target. So yeah. She's got a bit of a Kristen Wiig to her. So Matt, mm-hmm. can you describe the physical setting that we find ourselves in right now?
Yeah, we're on the first floor, two-story condo in an older building. I would say we've got about 600 square feet and on the main level. And most of it right now is taken up with Halloween decorations in basically every corner. New stuff, a lot of old stuff as well. Things hanging from the ceiling and from the walls and from a bunch of the chairs.
Okay, why don't you do a Jeff Pollock mm-hmm. sell?
Yeah.
And I'll see if I can count all the things I see as fast as I can.
Right.
Okay, ready?
Yep.
On your marks, get set, go.
Well, I already did kind of one sell. But you know what? You can never really sell Jeff Pollock enough. Let's face it. In this uncertain times that we live in, you know what you need? You need legal help. At some point, it's going to happen. And you're going to want someone that you can trust. Well, we've trusted this guy for ages. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. Here's how good he is. He's doing free work for Bob, and he's the one, as Bob said, he's chasing Bob. It's not the other way around. I get it done early. On the other end, like Bob, you know, has been delinquent on this, but Jeff doesn't matter. He's still going to do it. He still asked me about CC and her driver's license. All right, Bob, you're done counting. What number you got?
Well, I've done it as fast as I can, but I see 44 pieces of Halloween paraphernalia, but Matt,
yeah,
in one room.
That's right.
In one room, there is 44 pieces of holiday cheer.
A couple things. One, Amy did say yesterday she felt like she didn't have enough. And she was, you know, she was underwhelmed by her effort, which is ridiculous, but that's Amy.
Oh, wait, 45, 46, 47.
There'll be more. It kind of happens. The second thing, I've been doing a bunch of live TV hits today, talking about the Blue Jays. So for CP24, CTV Newsnet, and I have to make reference to it off the top because the anchors, you know, are looking in the background going, what the hell does this guy have on? And then finally, a friend of ours, Steve Dankoff, sent me a text going, are you married? Do you have kids? I'm like, no. This is how any 50-year-old without children would have their home decorated 3 weeks before Halloween.
Matt, you're not married, but you are kids.
That is true. Yes. Yes, that is the exact way to do it.
You can either have them or be them. I'm starting to think, you know, I love my kid, but there is something to being eternally youthful. I want to do something quick with Halloween because we have so much sports to get to today. And I wasn't expecting to do this, but I quickly jotted this down because I feel now we have to do Halloween month.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, how did I miss this? There's a gigantic
head on the middle of the table. Yeah.
49? Is that? Or am I at 49?
40, yeah, we'll 50. We'll
there's
50.
A spider. Yeah, we'll call it a nice 50. That's golden. Wine pairings with AMC horror franchises.
Ooh.
It's Fright Fest.
Yep.
Fright Month on AMC. I've already watched Friday the 13th Part 2.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's where he gets the mask at the end of it because he doesn't have the goalie mask in Part 1.
He's wearing a bag.
Yeah, he's wearing a bag.
Most of that movie.
Oh, wait a minute. Does he not get the goalie mask till Part 3?
It's Part 3.
Yeah, Part 3, which a lot of it takes place in a barn. And what I love about Part 3 also, they have to have punks. They have to have mohawks. It's like 1984. Some.
If you have a mohawk, you're dead.
Oh, you're dead. But some coked up producer is like, hey, we need punks. And as we know, all punks got mohawks. Let Jason murder someone with a mohawk.
That's what the kids like that. You know, kids skateboards, like computers, all that stuff. Okay, so I want to do wine pairings.
Yeah.
So Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be an ice wine because there's something kind of like chilled and creepy and distant about Michael Myers as a serial killer. So an ice wine that goes along with your viewing of the Halloween franchise.
First, here's what I love about this pick, because as anyone knows, most of the time when you're going to do ice wine, you pick at the middle of the night because it has to be legally, there's a certain temperature it has to be below before you can pick grapes to legally make ice wine. It is done at night. Very creepy. There is a lot of good producers. I'll go off the top of my head. I'll go Stratus or maybe Henry Appelham. But the key is the grape varietal. Vidal is not as good. It's a little more. It's a little cheaper. But if you can spend a couple extra bucks, I think Cab Franc is the best for ice wine in Ontario.
Great. Do people understand what you're talking about?
No, I was just being a jackass there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th. It feels like it should be very full-bodied, red-blooded kind of wine. That is a particularly gory franchise.
Yeah, so full-bodied. We'll stay away from the States right now because still the tariffs, so we can't get California cab. I heard Mark Carney really drove a hard deal with Trump. Of course, if you're the presser yesterday, Trump's insane. Like, we're talking, he really is. Like, when you actually just break down the words, it's like, what are you saying? So, okay, so we'll go full-bodied, and I want to try to keep this Canadian. Go find something from BC. Go from Okanagan. You'll get a Bordeaux blend, a Cab Merlot blend from Okanagan.
Okay. And finally, the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. And of course, I'm saying like, and it could be the first one. It could be Dream Child. It could be
Dream Warriors.
Dream Warriors.
Oh,
sorry.
That's the one that had Dungeons and Dragons. That scratched an itch.
It could be Freddy versus Jason. I think this one should be European because, as we've said, we've talked about this. Freddy is kind of a European style serial killer. He's quippy. He's got a hat. Oh, I slice you.
Yeah.
So this should be European. And I wrote down clever, spiky, quippy.
Okay, clever. Clever, you need to be clever when it comes to blending the grape varietals. So we're not going to go Bordeaux. I don't like Cab with my chocolate. So I'm going to go with Southern Rhone. I'm going to go Southern Rhone wine. Also, you can get good Southern Rhone wines from early $20. It's a blend of Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre. The little bit of spice will do well with a lot of the chocolates that you have.
Reach out to us and just let us know if you have any idea what Matt's talking about.
Yeah.
I don't, because I don't drink wine. But I'm wondering if wine drinkers will.
Wine drinkers will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So, Matty.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were paying attention last night, but the Jays game was, really was a tale of two games, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, that game was, It's one thing to get beat. The Yankees are really good. They're really talented. Aaron Judge, that home run he hit to tie the game, almost no human being could do it. That wasn't even a bad pitch by Louis Varland. The problem is when you lose because of simple errors. It wasn't like some hot shot down the third base line. It was Isaiah Kiner-Falefa just muffing it in the first inning, allowed a run, and then that means more pitches on Shane Bieber. Who knows, maybe goes longer if that doesn't happen. But then the number nine hitter, Austin Wells, pop up. And you could see Addison Barger, ooh. And when he drops that, and maybe David Schneider should have called him off. And then a couple of batters later, then the Judge home run. Now it's six. That's the worst part. You lost. One of the main reasons, because of two stupid errors on very playable plays.
The Addison Barger error looked like a guy failing a drunk test. Mm-hmm. Like he was, you know, step out of the car, sir, and field this pop-up. That was the one that you just felt, because it would have been two outs.
Yep.
There would have been nobody on. And even with the walk that followed next, Fluharty seemed kind of thrown off. And yeah, he had been dealing to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you just know in your heart when Judge had two men on? And they'd done such a good job of avoiding that, but that a crooked number was going on the board.
The moment Barger dropped it, at that point, I'm like, I don't think the Jays are going to win. And that's right. Dumb. And that's just...
No, but it's true,
it's
though.
It's sports Toronto trauma. And if I'm being really super duper honest, do you know what I did at that moment when he dropped it?
What'd you flip to?
Part two of the Charlie Sheen documentary. And then I had the scoreboard on the computer, and every now and then I would kind of side-eye it and hit refresh, because like I just had a moment of cowardly, like it was total coward move by me.
I just thought of something I really want to do from now on, especially in big games where there's disappointment.
Yeah.
TSN has its turning point.
Yeah.
I think that you and I should have our flipping point. What is the part of the game where you're like, ah, fuck. And you start flipping around.
Oh, yeah. It was an angry flip. It's like, fuck you. Okay, no. Oh, a second error? Really? A second error on the nine hitter. Okay, nope. Let's see what's going on with something more wholesome and balanced. Let's see what Charlie Sheen's up to. By the way, nothing wholesome or balanced.
I want to throw out a thought.
Yeah.
That if the Jays wind up losing this series, that the score 6-1... will become for the Jays and fans what 4-1 has become for Leafs fans with the Boston Bruins.
Of course.
And you're going to say all the time they were up 6-1.
Yep. Oh, 100%.
Vladdy hits the home run, 2-0, great, but there's lots of baseball left to play, and the Yankees are a potent team. When they're up 4-1, you're thinking, okay, cool, excellent, but still within reach at 6-1. At 6-1.
We all dare to dream.
You let yourself go, I think we're going to do it.
Yeah.
I think we've got this in the bag. The mojo is so good. The Yankees look out of sorts. Matt, the director was doing the cutaways to the disappointed and angry Yankees fans. I love that cutaway. There's one guy just cursing and mad, and you're thinking, yeah, stick it to him. Rub some salt in that wound.
Yeah.
And then we got Bargered.
We got Bargered, 100%. And it wasn't just him. The Yankee bullpen shut down the Jays' offense. The Jays' bullpen didn't do the job. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, but the Barger error was the one that kicked it all off. And before that, you know, I bet there were some people going, I hope the Tigers win so Tigers-Seattle can go five games so that Toronto will be able to face a more beat-up Mariners team. There was definitely Jays fans thinking that when it was 6-1.
The thing that makes me the most nervous, because, you know, losing three games in a row shouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. But we're all nervous because the bullpen doesn't look great. Since they took Trey Savage out of the game, they haven't stopped scoring runs.
Nope.
The Yankees have been just piling on. When it got to 13-7, Buck Martinez said it over and over at the time and brought up again over and over last night. You're letting the Yankees take a good look at your bullpen. They're getting a book on everybody. And more importantly, we had to contend with the fact it's not a great bullpen, whereas the Yankees were shutting us down. And today, It's a bullpen game.
Bullpen game.
What the fuck?
Is there anything more? It's so underwhelming.
The two most deflating words in baseball, bullpen game.
It really is. Now, if you want to be positive, you're like, oh, no, Cam Schlittler. Well, Schlittler did that to a anemic Red Sox offense that, you know, had lost Roman Anthony, and they didn't have that many bats. And the Blue Jays, in an incredibly limited sample size, they've gotten to Schlittler. Schlittler's got like an 80 RA and 10 innings or something. I got the numbers somewhere. So that's the positive. But it's just bullpen game. Well, that sucks. Well, who do we got to start the bullpen? Is it David Wells? No. Remember the guy who gave up two hits last night? They were both home runs. Oh, you mean Louis Varland? Yeah. Oh, that guy's starting. Oh, okay. So. All right. Well, that sucks. You know, that's also part of it. It's fine if you have a bullpen game and you're the Padres. Not as much as a bullpen game with the Blue Jays.
You don't want a bullpen game on the heels of watching them implode two consecutive games. Vladdy's been great.
Yep.
Vladdy's been inspirational. Ernie Clement's been terrific.
Love him. 4 for 4
last night. Who doesn't love him? Yeah, Savage has been great. Varsho's been excellent. There's been a lot of reasons to love this iteration of the Jays in this playoff series, even as disappointing as yesterday was. But this is Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
We always find ways to extract victory from the jaws of defeat. Or yes. I should say extract defeat from the jaws of victory. So I've got my poem.
Oh, that's right. All right. Let's hear your poem.
You ready? Yeah. And this is from T.S. Eliot from 1922, I believe, called The Hollow Men. And I will read it, and then we will discuss.
Do it.
Between the desire and the spasm, between the potency and the existence, between the essence and the descent, falls the shadow. Being a Toronto sports fan is to live in the shadow.
I'm going to say this.
Okay.
First, I'd rather have jazz at your funeral than that poem.
Why?
Because that poem's a real Debbie Downer. That poem. Yeah, it is the shadow. And the funny thing is there's other cities out there. Minnesota, Atlanta. They're like, oh, your misery? That's cute. By the way, Buffalo's on line 3. But there is this shadow. You know, it's the mostly the Maple Leafs' fault that... And it kind of sticks there. It's like the oatmeal on the gums of Toronto sports fans. And yeah, it exactly is like people were making comparisons to Vlad's got to show up. Oh, Vlad's like Austin Matthews. And 6-1. Oh, now 4-1. Absolutely, there is a connection between the two. And the shame is, come on, guys, let's remember the 2019 Raptors. You know, they were fun. They were out there. Kawhi wasn't planting trees. It was a fun time back then. But no, great poem, Bob. Perfect poem.
Thank you. You know, here's the rule, Matt. Just don't embarrass me.
Mm-hmm.
I will cheer for you. I will give you my irrational love. I will give you way more money than anybody should. And if you lose, I'm okay with that. But just don't embarrass me. It's like when you're getting yelled at in public, whether it's at work or in a relationship. You know what? Invite me to a room. Close the door. Give me shit there. But don't embarrass me. You and I are out here talking about how much we love these teams, and then they do that. They embarrassed us in public, Matt.
They did. Kiner Falafa.
Santander.
Well, Santander has been just dog shit. He's had a couple bad defensive moments in the 3 games. He's not providing any offense. And, you know, then you throw in the money thing.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like when he's out there in the field that there should be their Benny Hill music when he's trying to, him trying to track down that ball in right field was almost like, okay, now stop it there, kids. Everybody, I want you to watch. This is how you don't play right field.
Yeah, don't do it, Donnie, don't does.
Ever. Bieber wasn't great. I don't think that Schneider was wrong to pull him. He was getting pounded.
Yep.
And balls were dropping and he was getting a little bit lucky and it felt like the Yanks were about to break through.
Yeah, I was fine with it. You know, it's the only shame is it's the counter argument would be you're doing a bullpen game. You might want to give Shane more than 53 pitches. Yeah. That I think that's the counter. I was fine with it. I wasn't sitting there mother bleeping John Schneider, but I understand that argument.
It feels like it was a bad night for the Jays late season's additions. you know, in that it was Bieber and then Varlin gives up the big home run to Judge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But really, I don't feel either one of them was bad. And particularly in Varlin's case, he actually had great stuff. And this can't be said enough. That pitch that Aaron Judge hit, that makes no sense.
I know.
It was 100 miles an hour on the inside, like inside the plate. How do you turn on that?
I'll go with a football reference. When the Steelers beat the Cardinals in the Super Bowl, Ben Roethlisberger beat Kurt Warner.
Are you thinking about the James Harrison run back?
No, I'm thinking about the Ben Roethlisberger, the touchdown in the corner. No one talks about the defensive back because the coverage was great. It's just the route was a little bit better and it was a perfect throw. And you can have the best coverage as a corner, but you can't beat a perfect throw. And Varlin, that was a really good pitch. But Aaron Judge, that was a perfect swing.
It was. He's probably the second most amazing athlete in baseball after Shohei Ohtani. Mm-hmm. And if Ohtani's not there, it's hands down Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
The size. He even made a great defensive play when the Jays looked like they might come back. And he makes that, not exactly diving, but, you know, excellent catch out in right field. You know what it kind of reminded me of yesterday when we walked him and there was nobody on base? He's entering Barry Bonds territory.
Yeah.
Where every time he comes up, it feels like a disruption is about to happen. And you have to start thinking about him three or four batters ahead.
The moment Austin Wells is on second with that error, I'm like, that's the nine hitter. Gosh, you know, never mind that shit. Mongo, here comes Mongo.
Well, and they were talking about Fluhardy, how his job is just to get these next two lefties out because you've got a plan for Aaron Judge. We're going to bring in the righty for Aaron Judge, which is the right play. But it's like Schneider and his crew, three and four batters ahead, have to start thinking, okay, how are we going to manage this team? Because this guy can hurt us. Barry Bonds territory.
Quick Barry Bonds stat I saw this morning. Juan Soto, I don't know the number. He led baseball in walks this year. Bonds had more walks than Soto at the All-Star game in one of his seasons.
Unbelievable. He used to see one pitch in at bat.
Yeah.
And then he hit 73 home runs.
And then he'd hit the home run. Yeah.
The fact that he was so juiced up, it really overshadows the fact that just physically, steroids or not, what he did at the plate with his eyes and his hand speed and all that. I don't know that baseball's ever seen anything like that. One pitch and at bat, Matt.
Yeah. No, we could do a whole thing on you should be in the Hall of Fame, but there's too much going on in the world of sports right now. That's an August topic.
You know what? We got a ton of sports still to get to because we've got the Leafs starting up tonight. We
haven't talked to any Connor McDavid.
Honest to God, there's so much. Can I just throw, if I sound a little off today, I want to explain why.
All right.
Because I'm doing my best, but I'm playing a bit injured.
Okay, you do not seem injured.
Well, thank you, because I'm just trying to be a grown-up about it, but yeah. I got a bit of a headache, and my neck's really killing me.
Yeah.
And I went to the massage therapy guy yesterday, because I don't really do physiotherapy. Yeah, I'm a guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just, nicks, bruises, cuts, whatever, you just...
You move on.
You move on. But... it was really hurting, so I went in, and the scalene muscles of my neck are really, really tight.
Okay.
And the scalenes are the ones that are in the front. They're kind of like on either side of your windpipe, and they connect your head to your chest and your shoulders.
Okay.
And they're really tight. And you know how I think I damage them? Meditating.
Really?
Yeah.
You damaged yourself meditating?
Isn't that the craziest thing?
I feel you're meditating wrong.
Because when you sit up super straight,
yeah,
like that, you're putting a little bit and you're lifting your head, you're putting a little bit of extra pressure on your scalenes. And if they're weak, it strains them. So you're sitting there, and I've been doing this 20 minutes plus every day for weeks now. And I started to notice I actually have numbness in my fingers and tingling in my fingers. And
is that a stroke or is that meditating?
Well, that's what I was wondering. I feel like if you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it was a bit of a Scully experience. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, okay, my body is interesting. So I went in, but then I said to him, is it possible? Because you think to yourself, like, what am I doing differently? Why now? And I thought, well, I did start meditating pretty seriously about a month ago. And I mentioned to the guy, he's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that and bike riding. So my efforts to get healthy have ruined me.
They're biting you in the ass.
Isn't that ridiculous?
It's like finding out kale is filled with sugar.
It still tastes the same.
Yeah, exactly. It still tastes the same. I think I'd be bad at meditating because I'd be like, meditating. And then I'm like, I'm meditating. Meditate. And then I would take meditate. What if I took the letters from meditate? What other words could I spell? How much would that be in Scrabble? I hate it in Scrabble when someone uses like Q, like just Q or QAT. It's like, no, those are the Scrabble book. I'm like, fuck off. Use a word that you use in everyday life. And then, you know, it never worked.
I was thinking when you were saying that about words that rhyme with meditate, because I could see you doing that.
Yeah.
It's like when Lisa Simpson is calling up the boy band line.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And here are some other words that rhyme with Corey.
Allegory. Yeah, yeah. Let's see what else is going on in the news. And I think it was like a John Sununu reference or something.
And it's paying by the minute. Yeah. So here I am, Matt. Flummoxed.
Mm-hmm.
Doing my best though.
Yeah.
I'm having a bullpen game today.
Yeah. Here's one way I'm helping the Blue Jays. I put down a $20 bet, which is like the maximum I'll ever do, on the Yankees to win the ALDS. I got it at plus 186, which basically means I would win $36. So that's another thing I do. I'm like, okay, well, I got to protect myself emotionally. So I put down a $20 bet. I did it last time that said the Yankees would win the AL East. I lost that $10. Perfectly fine with that.
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed, but I'm going to do this. Are you ready, Matt?
Yep.
You have FanDuel as a sponsor on your show.
That's right.
You're not a gambling guy, but you talk about odds and things like that all the time.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't really understand the plus and minus thing. Can you explain it to me?
Well, if it's like plus 180, you bet $10, you'd win $18. If it's minus 180, you'd have to bet $18 to win 10.
So you would win 28.
If it's plus 180, then $10 wins you 18.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if I put down 10 and it's minus 180, what do I win?
If it's $10 and it's minus 180, you'd win like $6.80 back or something. Do it in hundreds.
In addition to your 10.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You'd be up 16. In the other case, you'd be up 28.
Yes. So this bet, $20 plus 180. So I would win $36 total. So,
okay.
Yeah. So that's how it works.
You know, nobody has ever explained that. And all of these damn things, Sports Center.
It takes a long time. Like, it does. You just got to get your brain in. It really does. It takes you. It's the same way that I can now look at a running back if they got 18 carries for 94 yards. It doesn't take long for me to figure out yards per carry. Just the brain unlocks something. It's the same thing with some of these betting numbers.
Okay, so are we good with the Jays or do you have anything you want
to add? No, we're good with the Jays. We covered them.
Well, especially because we've got the Leafs tonight. The season opens tonight.
And by the way, NHL, Easton Cowan recalled from the Marlies, motherfuckers.
Did that happen?
It did. When you were transit TTC. I don't understand what goes on. It's all but just last second salary cap stuff where guys are brought up. Guys are to the Marlies. Oh, we can't move that guy because they have to go through waivers. And my eyes roll over. I'm waiting for the Mark Masters or the David Alter. Just give me the tweet with who's on what line and I'll move on with my life.
I was reading Myrtle's article in The Athletic about the salary cap situation.
Yeah.
I made it about 2/3 of the way through. And that's only because the season's just starting, so I'm a little more into it right now.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't do it.
No, it's hard.
I did not get into sports for math.
No.
Okay, so Leafs, is there any particular take that you feel really strongly about as we wade into this post-Mitch Marner era?
Well, I think the main question I have is, will there be one other forward that'll be consistent? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking Domi, Bobby McMahon, or I guess Matias Michelli. Mm-hmm. Can one of those three guys spend the majority of the time, and I don't count which line it is, because we know there's going to be guys bouncing up and down, and oh, Max Domi's there. Oh, Max Domi's at center because Scott Laughton is hurt. But can we have one of the, and this is not the main one. The main one is obviously everything Austin Matthews. But I'm curious about, can one of those forwards be a consistent asset for the top six?
Now, do you include Nyes in that list?
I think Nyes deserves, I think Nyes is going to be great. You know, he's gotten better in each of the last 2 years. He's really big. He's got a skill set that's improving. He's a young guy. I'm not as worried about him. I feel good about him. Even as a true rookie, still felt comfortable in that playoff series against Tampa.
We're just kind of assuming that he and Matthews are going to be stuck together.
Yeah.
And that's the new pairing moving forward. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that's true. We're assuming that.
Yes, I am assuming that. I'm assuming those two and Nylander and Tavares, and then it's the two other wingers. What's going to happen there?
And I think we're assuming Nyes is with Matthews now.
Yes.
To go back to your point about who else is going to step up. Because if it's not the case, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
Because the magic words, the coach is putting the lines in a blender, is never because things are going so well.
No. At some point, yeah, I'm tired of the blender. I don't even like margaritas. I really, you know. And,
oh my God, shit, margarita. Yeah, that's what happens when you put the lines in a blender.
Yeah, exactly. When no one's working, it's like, well, time for a shit margarita.
I feel like that one should stick. That's good.
Yeah, the shit margarita. I think I get in trouble if I use that on TSN radio. But
poop.
Yeah, the poop. Yeah, poop margarita. Poop margarita, everyone. What do you got in this? Well, we got the worst tequila, some grape crush, and it's all
bar shots.
Yeah, and bruised banana.
Rail. Right? Is that what they call it? Rail shots?
Yeah, bar rail. Bar rail. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Mitch Marner had 102 points last year, and I keep hearing about how, you know, Michelli or McMahon or whatever, like, where are the points going to come from? They're not coming from these guys. We're going to not score as many points as we did last year. That's just what it is. If it is going to come from somewhere, though, the chunk that interests me the most is the chunk that comes from Austin Matthews.
Yeah. If he goes back to being 45 to 52 goals, well, that certainly helps without Marner there. And then you hope for a little, hey, finally worked for the Blue Jays, a little internal development from the Maple Leafs. And you just hope one of these guys just hits. And hits means they got 23 goals. Jonas or Myrtle, one of those fellas, they looked at how that the players brought in, that these guys have scored in the past. A lot of them didn't have great years last year. So if they can channel their inner 2023.
Forgive me if you said it, but amongst those forwards that you want to see, how much are they going to put out there? Is Domi in that list? Did you mention Domi? Because
yeah.
I feel like he needs to be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Max Domi, absolutely. They gave him another contract. They've given him all these opportunities. And yeah, so much of it's going to be about Max Domi.
I did not want to see him at center.
No.
And it really speaks to the John Tavares is back. They've never solved who's going to be their third line center. Since the trading of Nazem Kadri, they have not addressed depth at center in any meaningful way.
Correct.
And you really see it when you take guys and, you know, yeah, he can, but he's not good at it. And it's hard to be optimistic when you say, well, all we need is for that guy who's never done this to suddenly start doing it.
It's true.
That always worries me. You hear this all the time at the beginning of series, you know, like Scotty Barnes. Well, all he has to do is start making 3-point shots at a meaningful clip. Oh, you mean that thing he's never done?
It's true.
He just needs to start doing that.
And the way it's worded makes it seem easy. He's just got to be more consistent. Okay, mm-hmm. So the hardest thing in sports. Awesome.
Right.
All he just needs to do. It's way harder.
All he needs to do is be faster, bigger, more skilled with his hands, and think the game more quickly.
Where do you think they end up in the Atlantic?
Third, possibly fourth. I think the Magic.
I don't know. I think Florida won yesterday, but they don't have Barkov. We'll see when they get Tkachuk back. They've played a lot of hockey. Now, if they get those guys back in the playoffs, I'll bet the Florida Panthers to another cup. But I think, to me, it's Tampa feels like the clear number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would put the Leafs second because every team has its warts. And we'll see what's going on with Joseph Woll. Hopefully, whatever's going on in his family life, he can come back. But between Woll, Stolarz, and Hildeby, that's really good on goal.
And this new guy they just brought in.
Yeah, they've got the goaltending is good. The defense, that's a good defensive group. Matthews and Nylander and Tavares and Nyes. You know, a lot of teams would love to have that. So I don't think there's going to be the 110-point team, but I would have Tampa first. I would have Leafs second. Leafs and Florida and Montreal and Ottawa all just sort of fighting it out. I think it'll be close. I predict Leafs second.
Okay, and your points are sound, but here's why I'm saying third, possibly fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa, I do think, will be at the top of the list.
Yep.
Florida, I think they're in that phase of the dynasty where they don't need to win the season to feel good about themselves.
Nope.
But they are still really good.
They are.
The shine is off them a little bit, but while they're not the runaway winner, I could see them landing second. And then we also don't know where Ottawa's at. Ottawa has shown signs that might be getting better and better. And to couple that with Ottawa getting better, we don't know how good these Leafs actually are. So this isn't the Leafs from last year. If it was the Leafs from last year, yes. But they are diminished in terms of regular season talent.
Yep.
Mitch Marner may not help you win in the playoffs. In the end, it might be great that this divorce happened because the Leafs become a better playoff team. But for the regular season,
oh,
he was an incredible contributor.
Absolutely.
In all phases of the game. All phases. Penalty kill, power play, scoring, just depth, taking pressure off of other players because he can carry play. In the regular season, not having Mitch Marner, I think, is going to hurt us more than people are willing to admit. Because also, when you're in the middle of February, and you're on the road, and you're in Columbus, nobody gives a shit. Maybe they're out drinking the night before. The ability to roll out top-end talent can be the difference between a win and a loss. Just that one guy who's good enough to get you a 3-2 win on the road when everybody else isn't really paying attention. If you hand that over to the scrubs, other teams look at you, lick their chops, and go, we got a wounded animal coming in here. We'll take them out. And that might be worth 5 or 6 points over the course of the year.
Or will be, yeah.
So I'm not sure the Leafs have... I think the Leafs will be better in the playoffs if everybody goes in healthy. Hopefully, ideally. But in the regular season, man, it's nice to have somebody who can put up 100-plus points.
Oh, God, yeah. Agreed. And by the way, I think most Leaf fans know this. I think most Leaf fans know you're going to win a little bit less, and it's going to be a little less entertaining. Like, that's just going to be the nature of the beast, just not having Marner there.
Win by committee actually kind of works.
It does.
In the playoffs, especially in hockey, where okay players can neutralize great players much more easily than perhaps in any other sport.
Yeah.
Just by effort. Can't do it in baseball.
Can't do it in basketball.
Can't do it in basketball. You could sort of do it in football, but those guys are playing so hard all the time.
Yeah, in football, it's single game elimination. It's another animal.
Right. But in a 7-game series, having depth, as we've seen over and over and over again, that the third line is the unsexy key to winning a championship. So maybe the Leafs are better positioned there. But in the regular season, and again, I'm kind of... I don't know what to make of Ottawa, but I remember there was one point where Florida was kind of shit and then they were pretty good. And then all of a sudden they were really good. And I'm wondering, is Ottawa going to be the next Florida?
Linus Allmark can be the best goalie in the league. I think
I've got him in fantasy.
You know, I think their offensive upside is the question.
Tim Stützle is ready for a breakout year, even more so than in the past.
Mm-hmm. But one point about the Leafs, when Scott Laughton, excuse me, comes back, mm-hmm. having Scott Laughton and Nicholas Roy.
Is it Waugh or Roy? Because I keep hearing both and yeah. Nobody can decide.
You know, I'm the last person to ask this question.
Fair point.
Yeah. That is good depth at third and fourth center. If that's your number three and number four center, I am more than happy with that because 90% of the league doesn't have those four centers. Those four centers are all healthy. I will take that in a playoff.
You know what's the wild card in all of this too, Maddie? Mm. We don't know who the Leafs are going to be come February because it feels like there's a deal in the offing. I'm sure they know they don't have enough really good players. I'm sure they know that John Tavares gave the team a nice team-friendly deal, but he's still not your ideal second center.
He got 40 goals. I think what
he's getting older all the time, and he absolutely needs Nylander to carry him.
Yes. What they need, if they can find another dynamic winger for that second line,
yep.
then that to me is the secret sauce, if they can find that. And the other one that people don't keep bringing up, and I keep doing, Chris Tanev played like 75 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot for a guy that age, that style.
We talked about him being, you know, hopefully not the next Jake Muzzin.
Yeah, exactly.
But there will be that one play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there could be that one play where you go, oh, I think he's done with us.
So I want to connect McDavid with Marner.
Me too. Okay, go for it.
Because when Austin Matthews was asked, hey, that McDavid fella, it's a hell of a pay cut. He 2 years, he's not going to dime. How do you feel about that? And I want to be like, there's Austin, no answer you give will be good. In the middle, in the middle of this answer, you could come up with a peaceful, realistic solution for the Middle East while explaining, I found a way to cure blindness in children. No one will like your answer. And the worst part, he says, you know, yeah, McDavid, he wants to win just as much as anybody. And I'm like, and I went on air, I'm like, as much as anybody. I'm like, I get it. Listen, who am I to tell someone about money to make, not make, generational money, your career could end tomorrow, an ACL concussion. However, one person really took a sacrifice and the other didn't. But then I was thinking, do you think anyone in Las Vegas, do you think any part of the Vegas media, whoever they are beyond Gary Lawless, was going, huh, Mitch Marner, you seem to take as much money in term and everything in your power when you were with the Maple Leafs. How do you feel about the Connor McDavid deal? Do you think anyone in Vegas is linking the McDavid deal with Marner and Marner's past contract negotiations? No. So to the argument of, well, you know, you can see why players may not want to play in Toronto. 99% of the time, like, that's horseshit. Last 2 days, I'm like, I can kind of see it.
Or it just may speak to Mitch. Mm-hmm. He has always been obsessed with how he's perceived.
Yeah.
And not incorrectly, he sees how much he's getting paid as how much you respect him. That's the game of hockey. Everybody knows. You make as much as you can because your career is short, and what they're willing to give you tells you what they actually think of you.
Correct.
This is, you know, the world is an arbitration hearing all the time. That said, there are guys and have been guys over the course of the years that, like, and Sid Crosby, of course, is probably the number one example previous to this, who are like, okay, I'll be rich, but I also want to win. So let's find a middle point. And that compromise for us, like when we hear people say, the most important thing to me is winning, what percentage in the NHL of players do you honestly believe would turn down millions of dollars, maybe even tens of millions of dollars, to win a Stanley Cup?
I can't think of any that have taken the haircut that McDavid has had. And I'm not just doing hockey. I'm doing all sports. Usually the guy who takes the pay cut to win, Gary Payton with Miami.
Right.
Older player, didn't mean mm-hmm. as much. Ray Bourque with Colorado. Mm-hmm. Everyone brings up the Tom Brady one, but when you really look at it, it wasn't as much of a cut, and it was near the end of his career. And the difference is, when LeBron did it. LeBron did it to bring the big, and Dwayne Wade, they all did it. But they did it knowing, okay, this is basketball where the individual has the most control over winning and losing in the playoffs. So while they took a risk, they knew there was an excellent chance they were going to win. Connor McDavid took this risk, and this helps, but hockey doesn't have the same level of guarantee as it does in the NBA. And usually the guy who's the best in the whole sport, not an all-star at 32, but the best at 28, they don't do this.
There's only one thing left for Connor McDavid. That's to win.
Yeah.
Like, he's now playing against history, but he's got a losing hand because he has no titles. No championships. It's a bit of a Dan Marino thing. He might go down as being the Dan Marino of the NHL mm-hmm. if he doesn't win. Marino was the most talented quarterback in the world for years. And then you think about what happened, but never won.
Nope.
Never won a title. John Elway was that guy, and then he won two championships, and all of a sudden his status measured against the greats leaps up enormously.
It does.
You know, and we don't look at Ben Roethlisberger, who's won the same number of championships as...
He's won two.
As John Elway, I was going to say.
Yeah.
But we don't look at the two of them as the same.
No.
But you can look at Roethlisberger and Marino and say, well, Marino never won and Ben has two. Even though when you actually just compare their quarterbacking skills, nobody would say Ben is as great as Dan Marino.
Nope, not at all.
So my point is, in this convoluted multiple math kind of way, Connor McDavid wants to be seen as one of the five greatest players who ever lived. He can't unless he wins.
Correct. That's the game.
It's just that simple.
Yep, it's unfair. And the only sport where you don't need to win, where you can be considered the greatest ever, is baseball. The other three sports, you know, if you are the quarterback, if you are a star in the NBA or star in the NHL at some point, you got to win.
Which brings me to a question. Is this whole idea that you have to win as a mark of your greatness kind of overrated? And it's a bit of a narrative that's done by fans. But in terms of actually assessing a player's career, there are just too many variables that go into winning or not to actually make that a meaningful like benchmark for how great your career was.
I think we're better at it now. We apply a lot more nuance now than we did 20, 30 years ago. But it's not just about fans. It's not just the media. It's the players. Go watch NBA on TNT. When Shaq or anyone is taking a shot at Charles for never winning a title, mm-hmm. that stuff's real. This isn't nutty fan or nutty Reddit person. This is the entire sports ecosystem.
That's a fair point. And to bring back your point previously, basketball's a bit different mm-hmm. because one player can have so much influence
yeah.
on the game.
If I'm going to do the hierarchy, star NBA player, you've got most on the line for you to win a championship.
Carmelo Anthony never wins.
Yes.
He's just one of the great scorers of his time.
Perfect. Next level, star NFL quarterback.
Right.
You know, no one lament. Joe Burrow hasn't won it. Josh Allen hasn't won it. That's not their fault. That's defense and bad offensive line for the Bengals. Then the third level is the NHL player because Connor McDavid has Stuart Skinner. So if we're doing the unfair-o-meter, it's more unfair on Connor McDavid than it was on Dan Marino, than it was on Charles Barkley, but it is still there. And by the way, clearly this means everything to McDavid because Kirill Kaprizov just got $17.5 million, and McDavid is going to be the fifth highest paid player in the NHL, not even the highest paid player on his own team.
The Kaprizov deal is certainly just
fucking wild.
It's crazy that it happens in such close succession. I think this really speaks to John Tavares and his decision to stay with the Leafs mm-hmm. at a discounted ticket.
Yeah.
He just wants to win. He's another one of those guys who's going to be in the Hall of Fame, but is he going to be in the Hall of Fame with a ring?
Yeah. And how we look at them, it'll be so different. Like with McDavid though, I think we're all rooting for him. And now Stan Bowman got the greatest gift and he now has the most pressure. He's like, okay, you got 3 years. That guy just said goodbye to minimum $10 million. What are you going to do about it to put him in the best place? And then imagine being a teammate of McDavid.
Drysdale signed for 8 years when he signed.
He's thrilled. But what if you're Evan Bouchard? What if you're Stuart Skinner? It's like, oh, I better not fuck up on this playoff game because my captain just left all the money on the table to help me win as well.
How much authority? Did Connor McDavid just win himself in that room?
He gets to pick whatever music he wants every day.
You know what?
Whatever day.
Guys, we're listening to Shoop again.
Yeah, again, guys, Shoop.
Shoop,
yeah.
Shoop, dude.
Oh, you don't want Shoop? Guess who's getting achy, breaky heart, motherfucker?
And I like Sabrina Carpenter.
Yeah. That's still a catchy song.
Oh, you know, one more thing about the Leafs here. I just wanted to throw Joseph Wall's out.
Yeah.
And they're in a bit of a cap spot because it's for personal reasons. It doesn't count against long-term injury reserve. They can't park his contract. You know what I was thinking, Maddie? That's bullshit. We don't know why he's gone. There's something in his personal life. It's personal reasons. But if he had a twisted ankle mm-hmm. and couldn't play,
yeah.
they could park him and make it and get the cap benefits mm-hmm. from, you know, he's in like an escrow. He's just floating until he comes back. And it made me think about how much sports really has to still go in terms of the psychological, mental, social aspect of administering health. If you're physically injured, that doesn't count against the cap. But if you're emotionally injured for any way, oh, fuck it, that's not a real injury. You could come back if you wanted to.
Yeah. If I was going to push back, because obviously I agree with that, because the premise is, we need to treat treating mental health the same way as physical health.
Whatever it is, and we're making an assumption here that
whatever it is,
but if it is in fact something he just needs to tend to, and it's personal, then it's different than a physical injury.
I think the hard thing about trying to get that level that you want in professional sports is, though, you know, businesses are always competitive against one another. You know, McDonald's versus Burger King. But sports are still kind of their own little environment where, you know, I think that's why it's not there yet. I'm not just
that's not good.
Oh no, I know, I agree.
I hold this out that nobody is saying, isn't it weird that the Leafs find themselves in a cap situation because they've got a player that is emotionally injured?
I don't disagree with you. I'm just explaining. I think the reason why it's not here, maybe it will be. Yeah, I mean, think about how different we treat mental health in sports now than even, you know, 15 years ago. So maybe it does happen down the road. I think it'll be slower just because of the competitive-aholic nature of sports where everyone is always looking to get an edge.
That's true. It also, I think, speaks to the fact that they don't really believe that whatever happens to you emotionally, spiritually, is real.
They believe it more now than what they did.
Which was none.
Which was none.
Which was actually negative. It was minus.
You know, to
the word pussy was invented for describing guys. Oh, boo. You got a boo-boo in your eyes? You're crying? Yeah. My mother just died. Oh.
Shake it off.
Yeah.
We'll see in two
shifts. Rub some dirt on it.
Yeah, we'll see in two shifts. You know what? We were quoting lawyers.
See in two shifts.
We were quoting lawyers early on. I think when it comes to professional sports, not a hockey thing, this pro sports thing, there's, I'll quote Lionel Hutz, there's the truth and the truth. And I think there is some of that. Bob, I need to let you know, we got about like 5 minutes left.
Oh, well, I wanted to do SNL.
Yeah.
And the season, we got the season opener of the Leafs tonight, but it was the season debut of SNL the other night.
I didn't get to see it. I recorded it. So
do you want to do it next week then?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I also wrote down best movie dogs as a top five.
Yes. Do the best movie dogs.
We'll okay. Look. So I want to just, the reason why I went with movie dogs is the other night I couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. I was up at 4, and you know when you wake up and you're like, oh, fuck, I'm not falling asleep. Like, my day just starts now.
Yeah.
So Summer School was on with Mark Harmon.
Love that movie.
It's so great. Carl Reiner directed.
Yeah.
Totally underrated. Great, great, fun, teen 80s comedy. And in it, Mark Harmon has a dog named Wonder Mutt. And they have this great runner with the dog where the dog's little head, I can't remember what it was called.
Little doll.
For a doll,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He throws it into the ocean and it gets lost and he's sad through the whole movie. And in the very end, Mark Harmon's kissing Kirstie Alley in the surf and the doll head washes up and Wonder Mutt's all happy again. And the movie ends with the dog licking their faces and they're laughing.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And I thought, God, I love when dogs are in movies. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen enough. But in fact, this is a little inside baseball, but my wife is production executive at CBC. And so when she was working on Kim's Convenience, you know how they have interstitial scenes? Like, you know, they'll have like city scenes that take you from one scene to another.
Yep.
They're called interstitials. She insisted that once a show, one of those interstitials have a dog in it.
That's a great idea. Everyone loves that.
Because everybody loves that.
Everyone loves
dogs. So it got me to thinking best. And so top five best movie dogs. And I didn't want to do Lassie or Benji or Rin Tin Tin because they're institutions. I wanted to do more like fun add-ons like Wonder Mutt.
Yep.
Although I will say, just to the side of that, Cujo was my number five.
Okay. Cujo, your number five. A delightful dog.
Because what guts does it take to make the dog the villain?
It's true. Good on Stephen King.
In The Omen, too.
Yeah.
Right? The Omen has those crazy Doberman pinchers.
That's right.
They're fucking terrifying.
Oh, my God, they were.
So dogs don't get to be villains very often. I guess just show some range. Number four, dog from John Wick.
Yep.
The Beagle to start, and then the Pitbull Terrier that's taken over at the Continental.
Mm-hmm. Great dog.
Love that dog. Number three, best in show. Specifically, Beatrice, the Weimaraner, who's owned by Parker Posey.
Okay, yeah, the gray skinny dog.
Yeah.
And Busy Bee. Where's Busy Bee?
Get the Busy Bee.
Yep, yep.
I want to come back to that one in a second. Number two, and I put this one in for you, the Border Terrier, Baxter from Anchorman.
Of course. I'm in a glass case of emotion.
And number one, and this was another, you know, after our fight last week about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Got to be there.
Brandy, the Pitbull Terrier who bites the Manson family on the balls.
Yes. That dog is awesome. And when he's sitting there and he wants to eat the food, you know he wants to eat the food? Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that dog. That is my favorite dog.
I have owned dogs my whole life. And when I saw that movie and how disciplined that dog was, Brad Pitt just goes, and it starts to eat. It's waiting before that. Mm-hmm. I thought, dogs can do that? Then not, you get, not my dogs.
Then you get angry at your dog.
So mad.
Yeah.
Opal, we need to talk. I'm not going to embarrass you in public because that's wrong. But I need you to come over here. I want to talk to you over by the fridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Rear Window when, but this is with your partner than with a dog. When, and I'm forgetting the name of the main actress from that with
Grace Kelly.
Yes, Grace Kelly. Thank you. God, that'd be easy. And she brings him like champagne and lobster. And Jimmy Stewart's like, I'm busy spying on my neighbor. And I remember being so angry at Jimmy Stewart and then being angry at my girlfriend at the time. It's like, who is this woman in this beautiful dress bringing lobster and champagne?
Matt, I'm sitting in a haunted house right now. I don't think you can say Amy's phoning it in.
Excellent point by you, Bob.
I want to go back to Busy Bee.
Okay.
Best in Show, which everybody should watch.
Yep.
Because it's a movie all about dogs. Christopher Guest in the spirit of Spinal Tap. So funny. But the neurotic yuppie owners, they're freaking out. And the Busy Bee is just like its toy. And they're screaming at each other, get the toy. And the fact that and the dog is like depressed and sad, I think that is the truest thing in the world. Like, I think about that story and I think, this is how families wind up on the rocks.
Yeah.
It's the Busy Bee.
Bob, if the Blue Jays lose tonight, I'm going to need my Busy Bee.
Ch-ch-ca. Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.